You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Atkins, and I'm here with Daniel M.
Yeah. Yeah. You sounded happy that time.
I did. It's because I was laughing right before.
Yeah. It shows. Yeah. It shows.
You think people can feel that?
Yeah. People can feel if you're doing an intro with RBF, resting bored face.
Yes.
Or they can feel it when you're laughing.
Yes. I suffer greatly from it, which is why I do more podcasts and less videos. But you should see 90 Second Leadership because those are
hashtag 90SL.
They're all visuals.
Yes.
So if you like quadrants, another stunning visual.
It is good. Well, today we're on day 4 of our Leadership Pipeline week. And I would love if we can share our favorite place to eat in Nashville.
Oh, because right. Okay, this is about pipeline, but you're immediately going for the jugular on
why Nashville is
promoting the conference.
Why Nashville is
incredible. Why people should come to Nash Vegas.
Yeah. Why you should come to eat in Nashville and then attend our conference.
I like people watching afterwards. Frankly, in Nashville.
People watching?
Yes, because people come here from all over, it's just fun to watch them.
Yes, and you don't need Broadway. A big belt buckle,
nope.
A cowboy hat and boots.
Nope. In order you can to get those all Nashville. Here on Broadway.
Yeah, that's true. What is that deal? Buy two pair.
Yeah, buy two pair, get one pair. I don't know.
Okay, come to Nashville, but when you come to Nashville, you need to visit Five Daughters.
The Five Daughters Donuts?
Bakery. Yeah.
Okay,
you
so
will never, I, ever, ever, is, ever, ever, okay, ever, so, ever have as good of a donut.
I don't know.
No, this is, it it's takes the best one in day.
Nashville for sure
to make it.
I'm a big fan of Gordo's in Austin. Mm. A blackout.
But this is like another category.
It's a cronut is what it is. Kind have of. You heard of that?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 127 layer
donut. It takes them more than a day to make a donut.
All that it's they're $5. Doing is making it. It's $5 for a Five Daughters donut. It's ridiculous, but
it's so
what
worth
they
it.
Do is they make the dough is like paper thin, and they just keep folding it over. Apparently, 127 times.
Yeah,
and then they cut it out. That just sounded more like the game Trouble than making does. A donut.
Can we go afterwards? I want to eat one of those donuts right now.
No, you can't.
All right.
But what we can do. Is talk about pipeline.
Yeah. So today we're talking about pipeline when it comes to people, right? So who are the people in a leadership
pipeline? In your pipeline.
So we're going to touch on bench strength.
Yes. Bench strength.
Bench strength, which we're going to elaborate a little bit further on the coaching during coaching days
again,
at our conference.
Yesterday, we failed to land the plane on the intro of sending people to the succession booklet.
Yes.
Because if you go to the succession ebook, you get a full 9 box. Now, I know I talk about quadrants all the time. And guess what? We just up the ante and I give you a lovely 9 box that I stole from McKinsey. And redid it from the ground up for the church. So you can choose a person and then you say, it gives you a good framework to say, where is this person in their stage of development? What do I need to focus on with them? So it looks at their performance and potential and allows you to put them in a box and you put them in a box to provide helpful clarity and easy next steps.
Next steps. Yeah. It's not about putting them in a box just so that they're in a box and you can label them. It's about development.
But if I sat and talked to you about a person, you would hem and haw, you would allow a lot of your emotions to come into play. You would make caveats and different things. The beauty of a tool like a quadrant or a 9 box is it helps you come to clarity quickly. And if it's a good one, it's going to give you next steps.
Yeah, to move because forward. If you want to move someone there, you need to know where the here is.
Right.
Right. And without knowing that here, you can never get them to the there.
Okay. So, yeah, you can't put people straight up in a box, but it's just a way any quadrant or framework that we use is a tool to get you to clarity so that then you can move on to next steps. So, by saying, hey, this person has a lot of potential, but we haven't yet seen them perform.
What was the label?
They're either a poser or a prodigy.
I love it.
We don't know.
It's tweetable. And you can actually download that white paper at lifeway.com/leadership. But let's get into the podcast. And be sure to use the promo code 5LQ25 at myleadershippipeline.com to get 25% off our entire conference.
Today, we will be talking about the people aspect of a leadership pipeline. So we have hit on a few aspects leading up to this. We've got one more tomorrow. I realize that this is a deep dive into pipeline for you listeners. It's a little different than our normal guest interviews and things like that. But we feel like this is maybe the most essential leadership development structure for a church. This is something that we at Lifeway are going to be rolling out, as you heard in that opening introduction, over the next several months with additional resources. We have some events coming up. So we wanted to emphasize this. We want to introduce it. We want to give you a real clear look at it so that you can begin to do some of these things in your church. And everything we've talked about thus far has been sort of theoretical. Systems and structures, things like that. So now we're getting into the who. Who is involved in this? How are they involved? How does this affect the human aspect? So our first question is simply, who are the people in a leadership pipeline?
This is going to be really profound.
I know. My mind's ready to be blown.
Wait for it.
Here it is, man. You ready for it?
I'm waiting.
Drop it.
Everybody in your church.
Boom!
Mind blown.
There you go. I mean, you know, we've said it. Yeah, there's so many taglines that could go with this. You know, God's hope for the world is the local church. This is plan A. There's no plan B. God didn't just save us from something. He saved us for something. You know, all those things. I hope we all believe that.
Yes.
And I hope that's why you're listening to this podcast.
That we believe that as the local church, that we're responsible not just to attract a bunch of people to a worship gathering, mm-hmm. but to develop them and deploy them, to disciple them. And this is in our DNA as believers, more than any organization. This is who we are. I mean, we are here. We're us three. We're sitting yes. around the table because people invested in us and discipled us and developed us. So when I say everybody in your church, I really do mean everybody in your church who is a believer. He or she may not realize that they are in the leadership pipeline. But if you have a systematic approach to developing and deploying people, mm-hmm. they are. They're in your pipeline. They just may not realize that they're yet in your pipeline. They may be a pre-volunteer, but when they move to a volunteer,
And sometimes people will ask us why volunteer that level is in a leadership pipeline. They're like, wait a second, why is volunteer? Because by that simple act of volunteering yes. or serving in the church, they're in fact leading.
When most people in the church are not even volunteers, most people in the church are participants.
Yes.
I mean, you're not volunteering by showing up on a Sunday and listening, yeah. and you're not really volunteering by being in a small group. I mean, and that's, there's a significant yeah. level of investment there, but you mentioned pre-volunteer, that phrase. Is that sort of we talked about
structure. We just made it up just now.
No, that's great.
It's a PV.
So we talked about structures in yesterday's episode. And we, you know, as we talked about the four layers of leadership, is there sort of just a big blanket category underneath of everybody who you're trying to move into that volunteer yeah, space?
I would view it the same way as I'm moving assimilation or connection for mm-hmm. people who are not yet in a group or not yet in biblical right. community. You realize you have this big pond that's stocked with people, right? Mm-hmm. Who are not yet in community that you're constantly trying to nudge and move and grab and take there. Same thing with leadership development. There's people here, an old pastor, I've heard this quoted multiple times, would say, there's gold in them pews. You know, there's people here who are gifted by God yeah. who, the moment they became his, they were marked in him with a seal, the promised Holy Spirit, and that Holy Spirit has given each of us, each one of you is gifted with a gift to serve the body. So there's people in our pews, in chairs, in folding chairs in schools and in pews in traditional auditoriums that have been gifted by the Lord. They have a ministry in the church, they have a mission in the world. And so who's in the leadership pipeline? All of the people in the church that really are in the capital C church that are a part of the called out ones that belong to him, we should have a plan to develop them.
Right. Well, because, you know, it's moving basically from Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, which hopefully everybody knows, it's by grace you've been saved through faith, to Ephesians 10,
2:10.
2:10.
Yeah, the Ephesians only has six chapters, not
what
10.
What did I say?
You said Ephesians 10.
Oh, I meant Ephesians 2:10. Oh,
I got you, bro. I got you.
Let's move to the next verse.
Oh, all right, dude. All right.
From 8 and 9, it's by grace you've been saved, to 10.
Yeah.
Ah. Did you see what I did there?
Yeah.
Which is we're God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus, prepared in advance to do, you know, good works that he's prepared in advance for us to do.
Right.
And then furthermore, going up into Ephesians 4 and remembering that we as pastors in verses 11 through 17, it says he is personally gave some to be apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors and teachers, church leaders for the training of the saints in the work of ministry.
Yep.
To build up the body of Christ until we all reach unity in faith and in knowledge of God's Son, growing into what? A mature man with a stature that is measured by Christ's fullness.
Which is a huge statement, measured by the fullness of Christ. So if people are developed in your church, the church is healthy, measured by the stature of Christ. That's an amazing passage that Paul wrote.
He wrote a few of those.
Yeah.
So our second question is again, this sort of open-ended question, but since we're looking at the human aspect, why are the people individually so important, as well as just that collective, that idea that everybody is gifted to serve? Why are the people so important in all this? Because we've talked systems and structures, but these are real people. So why is that so important?
As individuals, they are super important as each individual, because they've been loved by God, pursued by God, gifted by God. And then as each person plays a part in the overall body, that, you know, we're one body with many parts. Each person is so, so critical to how the body as a whole functions and how the body serves the community. So
can I interrupt with a question?
Do it.
Everybody says that.
Yeah.
Every person in this church is so important. I have not been in very many churches that treats every person as if they're equally important. Maybe that's the crux of a leadership pipeline and getting everybody into it, is so that everybody is doing the thing that God called them to. But I haven't seen that theory.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a biblical theory. It's true. But I haven't seen it played out in the church where everybody here is so important, because most people can come and go and never be missed at a lot of churches, or they just don't do anything worthwhile on behalf of the church. So, I mean, it's a two-sided thing. It's the church not creating the opportunities and creating a context for it, and it's the people not investing themselves. So I guess how do churches create a reality where that becomes the truth, where every person actually matters at not just the level of God loves them, but like they matter for the life of this church?
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's a combination, but it has to start with conviction. There's got to be a deep-seated conviction on the leaders of the church that this isn't just a cute slogan, but we really believe that the church is a community of gifted people. It's not a community with a gifted pastor. And so many times, I take some responsibility as church leaders, as pastors. We kind of have built systems that oftentimes where we are the heroes, and it's so unbiblical to view church as people. And there's a few gifted people here. The reality is we all are, those of us who belong to him, we are all gifted. And so church is a community of gifted people. That has to be constantly, because Christ died for us and the veil of separation was torn, we are all priests, every single one of us. We're all priests. We're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. That's got to be emphasized over and over again. So that conviction's got to be there. But then also things like a leadership pipeline can help show people, hey,
you care.
We actually, no, we believe this. So you're hearing me preach this, but as I'm preaching this, as this is being taught at our church with conviction, it's not just a sermon. Now, check this out. We've got a plan. We've got a pathway to help people get developed. And that's, I think sometimes people actually, that's when they start believing you. Right. When they actually say,
oh, they see it in action.
There's a plan here. And listen, it is not going to be ever this, just like we're not going to be sinless this side of eternity. We're not going to execute this perfectly ever. Never.
Go ahead, Tom.
And not get 100%.
Right.
Participation. We're not,
because hopefully next week there's somebody who's a non-believer who's showing up for the first time.
Well, and on that, that actually connects with the question that I had, which was, so when we've talked about volunteers and the tiers of leadership pipeline, all of that seemed like it was in the context of sort of official church ministries, so areas of ministry in the church. But it seems to me that the work of the church for most attendees is done outside the church.
Yes.
It's the work of community. Yeah. It's the work of reaching your neighbors. It's the work of going and making disciples. It's the work of representing Christ in your workplace and in your schools and whatever your context is. Does the volunteer level of a leadership pipeline essentially apply to people who are actively serving in those capacities? It's not an official church ministry, but they're doing the work of church elsewhere.
That's a good question. I would want local churches to wrestle with that in each context. But here's what I for sure can say. This is a fascinating research study for me. If we believe that leaders who are developed in the church have the qualities and characteristics that the world needs, then we simultaneously are believing when we're developing people in the body, we're developing them for more than just the body. We're developing them for the world as well. So there's so many just recent research studies. One it just came out in a book this year called Return on Character. And I always find it fascinating when secular research people discover things that us as believers have been like, yeah, we that's true. We believe that.
It was written in our book for 2,000 years.
That's already been true. But the book Return on Character basically says that based on research that the most effective leaders are men or women of integrity, compassionate.
Again, mind blown.
Yeah, forgiving. Like these are the, and there's actually a return for the companies that they lead, the organizations they lead, based on their character. Well, the good news for us is as we produce leaders in our churches, we are producing, if our competencies are aligned to a discipleship mentality, which I know Barnabas and Todd, the ones that you have on the website are, then we are creating leaders not just for us, but we're creating leaders for the world. Even a different research study that I found fascinating from the University of Michigan professor, I think the leader of the business school there, wrote a book called The Leadership Code and essentially asked the question, how much of leadership is fully transferable from any domain, from one domain to the next? And they concluded that as much as 70% of leadership is completely transferable. So
you mean like from one area? So if I'm leading in business, in one type of business, leading in an entirely different kind of occupation.
So if you're a high school principal, what percentage of that leadership is completely transferable to you running a Starbucks or to you leading an entrepreneurial startup? And they concluded that it was 70%. 70%.
That's crazy.
Which means, so look at those two studies together. If we realize that so much of leadership is actually about character, and if 70% of leadership is transferable from one context to the next, Pastor, listen to me. Don't short sell yourself here. As you're developing people to serve and to lead in your church, you're developing them for more than just your church. As they are sent out and deployed into different spheres of life, and help them think about that. Help them think about being a leader in the healthcare industry and in the civil industry and in the service industry, wherever they are. As you're developing leaders, you are developing them for outside of the church. You really are, which is just this profound responsibility that we have.
So, and that's important because I think it takes the insular nature off of this that people could see where we're trying to build walls around this.
Yeah.
Instead, it's more like a launching mentality.
Yeah, and realizing that the experiences that they have, even in an internal pipeline, are simultaneously helping them be leaders in all domains of life. But we must remind them of that. We must teach that.
Well, I think the other thing that shows how important this is if you look at the life of Christ. I remember Eric and I having a conversation probably about a year ago, and then he went home and actually read the four Gospels that weekend and looked at
how... For the first time. I mean, he was blown away.
And looked at how Jesus spent his time. You know, so often we want to... We want to divorce discipleship and development. Mm-hmm. But if you go in there and you look how much time he spent with the crowd versus how much time he spent with his disciples, with his core, just pouring into them personally, going aside from the crowd and speaking to them and saying, did you see what just happened? Let me process that. You know, all those things I think are, it's vitally important to look at because he did it.
Right.
He's our example. And far too many times, I think we think of him in front of the crowds and we don't consider how much time he actually spent with
the pastors.
With the
think about the Sermon on the Mount and skip the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
Well, let's hit our third question, and it's a bit of a shift, but we've talked about auditing the last couple episodes, auditing systems, auditing structures. So now we're going to ask, where does an organization, where does a church start when auditing, as Todd wrote the question, their bench strength? So the depth of people they have to draw on for leadership, what does that look like?
Well, one of the things that you do to help embed culture, one of the things you do to help embed this whole idea is to measure things. And what we're talking about here is really measuring something now so that you can kind of benchmark where you are and see in 2 years, you know, where you've been, how have we been doing? So I would say one of the most important things that you can do is regularly survey your people. Every 2 years, I would take 10 minutes out of a service. Wouldn't tell the staff, wouldn't tell anybody, but the guy who was over the ushers. And we would use the same survey. And we did it, I think, 4 times over the course of time I was in my last church. And what it revealed was things that we would never know otherwise. We make so many decisions.
So what are some of the questions you would ask on there?
Well, it's gauging someone's spiritual depth. Mm-hmm. It's gauging their involvement. It's gauging their level of leadership. It's engaging all these different elements that then you can actually take that, you know, data and use and say, okay, well, how are the leaders and how spiritually mature are the leaders in, let's say, our small group area versus, you know, outreach or our kids area? Where do we need to invest more time? What elements of spiritual disciplines or what do we need to focus on, right, given the knowledge that we know? Are we doing a good job of developing our leaders? Are the leaders that, is the data that we had 2 years ago, does it show that we've done a better job now at, you know, our base level small group leader is now more mature and equipped, right, and engaged than they were before?
What's really interesting to me is that what I hear you talking about when in terms of strength is more qualitative than it is numerical. It has to do with the strength of the individual leaders in areas as opposed to the number of leaders you have. So you're not just looking at it and going, how many people do we have serving?
No, but it is you can get both.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
but the number is the quick and easy way. It's probably not the most effective thing because it's much easier to count people than it is to gauge their development.
Yeah, because then as a staff, you're all going to break apart that and go, okay, well, why are we seeing, you know, this is a weakness now, or mm-hmm, what do we do that made this stronger? And you know, then you're wrestling with that to say, okay, subjectively, what does this number mean? But I think, you know, one of the biggest things that it does is it helps you establish how strong you are in different layers of leadership across the organization. And it's,
yeah,
the only way to do that is to do it systematically. You can't do it any other way, because otherwise you're making decisions based on conjecture, mm-hmm, and emails and whoever's the best at arguing at a conference table.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was going to just give another simple way to audit that what you're saying is super, super important. One that I would kind of regularly look at as far as how we're moving people is just simple succession planning. You know, if somebody, so I'm talking to the kids ministry director or the small groups director, hey, if we launched a new campus, you don't have to make it all about like if you left.
If I fired you, I mean, if you left, I mean,
if something happened. No, it can be about expansion. You know, who is ready? Who are you investing in that could handle the reins of a ministry area? So that, to me, that's one way to audit. It's just to constantly be looking at succession.
And you can do that at each level, I'm assuming.
So every level.
You can go talk to the directors and see.
Hey, we're going to launch two new small groups or two new Sunday school classes or two new kids groups. What leaders are you investing in? Yeah. So it's that, to me, that's the succession of it. It reveals a lot about the how well we're developing people. Right.
And one of the things that we've talked about previously is, you know, the importance of having like a standardized one-page job description for all your volunteers.
Right. Yep.
So volunteers, leaders, so on and so forth. If you're doing that, if you're sitting down, you know, once a year to ask them to recommit, or if you're actually having a review, it's a great time to look at that succession.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Document as well.
All right. So our fourth question then is, how do you transition from having warm bodies to weekly volunteers in ministry? We touched on this a little bit earlier, but we were just talking about everybody in the church serving in some capacity and the fact that in most churches that is not a reality. So what does that look like? How do you feed people into the pipeline, basically?
To me, this is really a mindset, and I just would challenge leaders to think differently in two ways than what we sometimes think. One, to not think I'm recruiting volunteers, but I'm recruiting leaders. Hmm. Whether even if you would, I'm not saying you use different language, but you're thinking further
That's
out.
That's your framework.
Yeah, yeah, for you thinking. I'm not recruiting someone just to fill a spot, but I'm recruiting someone who could be, and I'm going to shepherd, who could really be in a role that provides significant ministry to the body. And then number two, the second shift in thinking is think further out, not just I need to fill a need this week. And so when you think further out, you're really serving the organization well, you're serving the church well, but you're also serving that person well, because you're thinking about that person's development over time.
Right. Well, let me ask our fifth question, because I think we can answer both at once, because I think the fifth one is part of the answer to the fourth one, and that's, how does a church create a culture that engages and develops strong volunteers and leaders? And I heard Eric touching on that a little bit in his answer. So moving people into the leadership pipeline out of just being a warm body who sits in the pew to a weekly volunteer. And then how is that part of a culture that engages and develops strong volunteers and leaders?
Well, I would say the reason most churches or organizations have a leadership deficiency today is they never built a leadership development culture and then clear, you know, construct systems, processes yesterday. And that's when you get into the idea of practicing leadership placement and not leadership development.
When I'm going to come at answering this from the perspective of somebody who has been recruited as a volunteer a billion times, give or take. It is not motivating to me for somebody to say, hey, we need somebody to teach fourth grade boys. That it doesn't make me want to become any. I mean, I might go fill a spot and sub in for a little while, but it doesn't. It's not the same as if I know that there's a system, there's a structure, there's a process where I may be volunteering here right now, but it's a lateral move to volunteer in an area that's maybe more of an area of strength. The goal is to grow me and develop me from the leadership above me. And so I think that's a piece of it, is communicating that in asking you to volunteer, we're not only asking you to punch your ticket and you know, check the box, I did my churchly duty. That's what I feel I have felt like at different churches, is if you volunteer, you've done the thing that a church member is supposed to do. Check the box. You're good for a few months.
Well, so many times when we consider someone's, you know, discipleship pathway, we think about giving them the core of, you know, just loving Jesus and who he is, and you know, having them do an in-depth study of the person of Christ and making sure they understand the Bible is inerrant. Then we move on to things like spiritual disciplines. And so many times churches don't ever get around to doing like a shape class or a place class, where they're saying, hey, again, Ephesians 2:10, you're God's workmanship. He's got stuff specifically for you to do.
Right.
Most people never hear that. They don't understand that God has wired them for a specific purpose, and they cannot grow into spiritual maturity apart from using their gifts in service to Christ.
Right. When you say place, did you say a place class? Was that the term you used?
Yeah,
what is that?
Place is a ministry that basically they have a systematic way of saying, hey, what are your spiritual gifts? It's very similar to Shape. So Shape is probably more common than people know, that common one that people know.
Right.
It's spiritual gifts. It's your heart. That's what the H stands for. And that's what am I passionate about? Mm-hmm. Then A is for abilities. P and abilities would be, you know, your things that you're naturally talented in. P would be your personality, and E would be your experiences. So, we can't put anybody into a box because you may have the same personality type as somebody else. You may even have the same passions as somebody else, but God's given you different experiences than He's given me. And that may be educational, that may be vocational, or that may be just things that, you know, God brought me through as I grew up.
I think in terms of creating a culture and how and transitioning people, I think church membership is something that I don't know if it's, it seems to have lost influence over the years. I think there are churches that hold very dearly to it and like they hold their members to a standard. And then there are other churches for whom you're just kind of on a roster. But I have been to membership classes at a couple different churches, and the ones that do it well are the ones that immediately transition you from that into a next steps kind of thing. And the most effective one was one that included something, I don't know if it was Shape, but it was something along those lines that was a spiritual gifts assessment and a, and then basically a list of here are all the opportunities we have. Here's what your profile says you might really enjoy. You might be especially good at.
Match those up.
Match it up. Go get it. And that I think it sets the initial bar. Now, there wasn't a lot of follow up after that. That's where I think a leadership pipeline would be beneficial because it's pulling you into that. It's creating a little bit of almost gravity into that.
So I don't disagree with what Todd's saying about a tool that helps people identify their gifting or where they can plug in. However, I'd say if you're a church that uses a tool and then people spend an hour filling that out and that gets put in a filing cabinet
and
never operationalized or put into action, it can hurt, really.
Because it's way worse. It's worse than not having anything and just saying, hey, why don't you volunteer? And
it's like being told you're doing an awesome job at work and never getting a raise.
So a pipeline.
You stop paying any attention to it.
So a pipeline does help get people tapped into something. And I'd say the downside of the spiritual gifts tests, and I'm not opposed to them by any stretch. I've used them in every context I've been in. But they can... If you don't teach that we're all servants, we're doulos, the downside of them is people are like, well, that's really not my gift.
I'm not going to do this.
And I just don't have the right spot yet. Or people being paralyzed by, I just don't know. I don't know who I am yet. I don't know. As opposed to just jumping in.
Yeah.
Because when you jump in, you actually learn more about yourself as you're serving. Yeah. And if you have a culture that views this as leadership development, then you're going to be underneath a leader who's going to debrief with you and coach you and care for you. And so get plugged in serving somewhere is the message that some people need to hear. Not let's do 6 months analysis on you.
It needs to be the whole thing. You can't, it's much easier to steer a moving ship.
Yes. Get moving.
And serving in a churches are not job placement companies. People, you know, you don't have people coming along going, what's the perfect role for you? Hopefully you find a role that's perfect for you, but
if you're in a healthy church, you can move, you can try a different spot.
Yeah.
You're not stuck.
And the healthier the church, the more that serving outside your gift area won't be as cumbersome because there's a certain affinity for the whole mission of the church.
Yes. That's good.
Good.
All right. Well, we will land this piece of the conversation right here. So that was talking about the people aspect of a leadership pipeline. We have one more conversation to have on this tomorrow, talking about the content of a leadership pipeline. So we've talked system structures and people. The content is really what and how do you train people in a leadership pipeline? And so for you who are in church leadership, come back, listen to that one, because that's going to be a really practical implementation piece of this. Thanks so much for listening and tune in tomorrow.
Before you go, we want to remind you about the free e-booklet, Pipeline, Succession at Every Level. If you want to develop leaders at every level of your church, this booklet is for you. To download, go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there.